Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Sarah Gon, who I believe is in a restaurant somewhere because of lots of noise outside her regular podcasting place. So apologies if you hear any loud restaurant noises or strange things in the background. Sarah, how are you?
Well, I'm in a French-style patisserie, and I must say all you hear is the sound of chewing and slurping of cappuccinos.
very pleasant sounds for summer, I guess. And of course, we are joined today by a special guest who has, I think, been on twice before, once in a special and once in a regular episode. Daily Friend writer and contributor, Ivo Fechter. Ivo, how are you?
Good afternoon, Nicholas. I'm very, very well.
And he is joining us, I believe, from the Southern Cape.
Yes, from Knysna. I look out my window, I can see the lagoon.
How magnificent.
Very, very peaceful.
I look out my window, I see a brick shed, which is not quite the same thing.
Depends on your taste in art.
I suppose so. And if he's going to be interrupted by anything, it won't be jackhammers or restaurant noises. It's going to be cats, which have a habit of climbing on his shoulders during podcasts. So anyway. let's jump into it with a story that we touched on very briefly yesterday. I saw someone in the comments was talking about it. But the trouble going on with Transnet and South Africa's ports. And this story has been going on since, I think, Monday, but it's still a little bit unclear as to what precisely is going on. So the latest development is that ships are starting to bypass South African ports because Transnet has declared force majeure at its port operations on Monday. Container vessels that have been due to call in at Cape Town and Durban have been diverted, some going to Maputo in Mozambique and others just going straight to Asia without stopping in Africa. This is causing havoc for importers across the country. Transnet, in its official statements to the public, has said that it expects its force majeure declaration to be lifted soon, but didn't give anything like a timeline. In a note to its own staff and to its customers, it said that they were the victim of a hack or a disruption, which had caused problems for their computer systems. So quite literally, system is down. So Ivo, let's start with you. Your thoughts on this? What exactly is going on here?
Well, it's still unclear, as you say. It was actually longer ago than Monday. It was a week ago that Transnet announced what it just called a disruption on its IT network. It seems fairly minor. And they said, look, you know, everything is under control. The ports are staying open and everything will just be logged manually until we get this sorted out. It took until Monday for them to admit that this was what they called an act of cyber attack, security intrusion, and sabotage. And it affected almost all of its systems. Even its website is down. You know, so if you can imagine that the truck navigation systems, their port handling, their container handling systems, their website, all of that is down. You can imagine how extensive this outage must be. So port operations, all of South African ports have been affected. Container terminals have shut down completely. And as you said, ships are now going, bypassing South African ports to go and dock somewhere else in Africa. You know, the impact of this kind of attack is going to be immense. It's the height of the citrus export season. Perishable food is now stuck in trucks and containers, nowhere to go. The country will soon face shortages in staple foods, you know, rice being a good example. And the ANC has said that this attack was not linked to the looting in KZN. The DA, curiously, did say in a media statement that this was consistent with the MO of an insurrection and was potentially carried out by the same people who orchestrated what it called the failed insurrection of 2 weeks ago. Now, this made no sense to me. I mean, why the DA thinks it's a good idea to claim that the riots were an attempted insurrection and to link the Transnet outage to that is a mystery to me. I mean, a government under external attack is a government that gets domestic support. you know, all the DA is doing is giving the ANC political cover and popular support, saying, oh, you know, we've been attacked. It wasn't our fault. To my mind, the real issues here are that, A, a state-owned monopoly creates a single point of failure. Right? If we had multiple competing privately owned container ports, right, the others could have picked up the slack. Right? We wouldn't have had this crisis. And B, that Transnet has now been exposed as being woefully unprepared for cyber attacks. And, you know, I was technology journalist years ago, and I covered these sorts of things. You know, covered how companies prepare for disaster, how they prepare for cyber attacks, and how they recover from disaster. This just shows that Transnet hasn't done any of that stuff. Any major company, even small companies, ought to expect and plan for these sort of attacks. Now, if they couldn't predict and defend against the attack, right, fair enough, that happens. But then they should have had a disaster recovery and business continuity plan in place that could restore the company's IT operations to working order within, say, 24 hours. To still be down a week later is, frankly, unforgivable. If they were a private company, they'd go under for that sort of gross negligence. Sadly, it's not a private company, so that won't happen. But I do think that senior heads ought to roll at Transnet.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. I actually just tried to go onto their website now. It still seems to be down. And that seems really weird. I understand that the computer systems might still be in chaos, but the website?
Yeah, if they can't even get that up, it's you know, it sounds like it's probably a ransomware attack where someone's gone in and encrypted some of their key assets. You know,
Well, that seems like it wouldn't take long to fix. You either get rid of the software or pay the ransom.
Well, you could pay the ransom, which is a lot of companies do actually.
Yeah. I think the NHS got attacked by it a couple of years ago, and they did pay the ransom.
Yeah. No, but the other option is, you know, if you have very large, very sensitive computer networks, and, you know, I remember looking at some of the bank's computer networks, F&B in particular, actually, had a tour of their facility. They had an offsite facility, which was away from their headquarters, which totally duplicated the systems that they had at the headquarters, right? And then they ran them in tandem. Right. So if something happens at headquarters, right, you could drop a bomb on the place, right, and they could switch over to the duplicate system in you know, a matter of an hour. So Transnet obviously doesn't have good backups because they couldn't just restore their systems to a known good state you know, before the attack happened.
I think anyone who has interacted with a government IT system or website before is not terribly surprised by this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very fond of government websites that tell you that it requires Internet Explorer 5.0 or higher to use.
Yeah, indeed. Look, and that also suggests that, you know, we should be very skeptical when government starts introducing things like, you know, cybercrime and cybersecurity legislation and telling companies how to organize their cybersecurity. Clearly, government hasn't the foggiest clue how to deal with cybersecurity. So, you know, having all of this stuff legislated, no, please leave companies free to sort out their own cybersecurity. They will be much safer that way.
Yeah, I agree. Sara, your thoughts? Who in the world could be behind this? Is it just criminals? Do you think there's anything to what the DA is saying? What are your thoughts on this whole mess?
Look, I go with the conspiracy theory idea that given the bad press the ports have had recently, they've been rated sort of at the bottom of the scale worldwide. They're expensive, they're inefficient, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of weeks later, we get this. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if it was somebody pressed the wrong button and everything just went poof, because our ports are really in such an appalling condition. Anyway, that's my theory for what it's worth. But I'm actually not surprised that it doesn't have the sort of backup systems that Ivor talks about, because I don't think at the core of any government SOE or department where you, senior management, I'm not sure has genuinely enough an idea of what it is, the function is they're supposed to be performing. More than that, I can't really add. I just think the coincidence in the recent ratings and where it is now, and this having happened now, I wouldn't give them credit for for having an outsider having done it to them.
Yeah, I must say it's a nice example of attributing to incompetence rather than malice, which I think is true of a lot of conspiracies. Is the real answer is that it's covering up incompetence rather than covering up malice.
and I think it highlights the fact that we have this announcement from Transnet that the ports essentially will become independent companies, but not independent of Transnet, just independent. Right. Not independent, but just independent of Transnet. Instead of falling under the hole, they'll operate as independent SOEs. I mean, really, as I was saying, you know, it's privatized or bust.
I think in theory that could maybe improve things a little bit, but in reality, you look at something like in the city of Joburg, City Power, City Parks, all of these were created in the same way as SOEs, but under sort of a company structure. And they don't really work. In fact, it's just an extra layer of bureaucracy and patronage, which people have to deal with. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. Right. So let us go on to our next topic for today. And this is one that Ivor's very interested in. And that is China's war on its own tech companies. So recently we talked about China banning private tutoring. And now it seems to be taking the hammer and tongs against some companies that are pretty big there. Ivor, your thoughts? Am I right?
It's a strange thing. I mean, you know, the US has been worrying that China is going to overtake it in technology. I think they just recently passed a bill that you know, sets aside, I don't know, $250 billion or something for investment in bleeding edge technology R&D. But China seems entirely capable of sabotaging its own progress. You know, there's this organization in China called the Cyberspace Administration of China, which is, of course, just a department of the ruling Chinese Communist Party. It just pulled Didi Chuxing, which is China's answer to Uber, off of all of the mobile app stores. Right. Boom. Done. Right. Apparently, they are not compliant with certain data security standards or something. You know, this seems an incredibly harsh way to deal with that instead of just saying, look, you're not compliant. Would you please comply? You know, just saying, right, we're pulling you out of everything. Didi lost nearly a quarter of its $70 billion valuation overnight. And it's crazy what the repercussions were. China seems to be expanding its control over the data of companies, right? Especially especially targeting companies with over 1 million customers and overseas listings. Now, data privacy or security is not its major concern. Right? Its concern is simply direct access to and control over data. Right? It doesn't want tech companies to get too uppity and think that they can, you know, run things at the way Western companies would run it, with data privacy and some sort of autonomy over their own systems and data. So they're sending messages to everyone who think they can make money without towing the party line. The Ant Group, which owns Alibaba, was last year, November, prevented from listing. It's been forcibly restructured, and it has been heavily fined for alleged monopoly practices. Other firms have also suffered under China's harsh sort of whip. Among them is Tencent, right, which South Africans will know. It's a diversified company. It's into mobile video games, online chat, online payments, and online education. As you mentioned tutoring. This seems to be part of that. The Communist Party ordered it to make all of its education assets non-profit. This caused a 20% slump in the Tencent share price. And the knock-on effect in South Africa is that Naspers, which owns a stake in Tencent via its tech investment vehicle process, fell 14% since last week, lost 180 billion rand of its market capitalization. Right. So this whole thing, I mean, we can talk a bit about what this seems to suggest about Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party and where they're at. But I think this is a cautionary tale, really. If you're going to do business in an unfree economy where an authoritarian state can arbitrarily exert dictatorial powers, be prepared to sacrifice your assets at the whim of the communist bureaucracy. If you play with the dragon, you're going to get burnt. Right. And again, like the previous story, it's also a warning to local companies to resist legislation that would give the South African government similar powers over private data and assets, such as the draft national policy on data and cloud.
So, Sara, do you think that companies are waking up to the dangers of doing business in China? Do they believe that the dragon's going to bite them?
I think they probably are, and if they're not, they should have a long time ago. Because for me, the real signal of, you know, beware of what's happening in China was the minute that Xi Jinping was obtained everlasting status as the chairman of the Communist Party. Now that's immediately a sign that somebody has taken control, the like of which hasn't been seen for some decades. And I think a lot of what you're seeing now is that sort of going after anything that's in the neurotic state, they're looking for anything that might have a control over something else that they don't have control over. And it seems to ramp up. I mean, even the jailing, the finding guilty of a 24-year-old student in Hong Kong for terrorism. I mean, this kid drove a motorcycle at a group of policemen with a sign saying "Down with China" or words to that effect, and it's all a sign of increasing this. And the problem, of course, is that the business sector always picks up these clues way too late, if at all. You've always going to take a risk when you trade with authoritarian states, because you don't have any of the checks and balances that you can expect from a democratic state. So you are taking risks that you're not taking anywhere else. It's a significant and added risk to normal business risk.
Yeah, and of course, China's great economic miracle of the last couple of decades has been born of the fact that in a lot of places you really don't have to, you know, wade through an ocean of bureaucracy and regulation in order to do business, to start up a factory or to comply with safety standards or anything like that. And the Chinese seem to have missed their own message in a sense, that they are prioritizing control over prosperity, which is, I think, comes as no surprise to anyone who looks at the Communist Chinese Party. Ivo, someone here said in the comments, the Chinese seem scary. Should we be scared?
Yes and no. I mean, the Chinese don't really exercise any sort of power or control over us. You know, so from the perspective of should we be scared to deal with the Chinese, to buy from the Chinese, to let the Chinese set up shops in South Africa or whatever, you know, or win tenders in South Africa, I don't think that's a particularly scary prospect. China's investment in Africa, I think, is largely good for Africa. It, of course, comes with all sorts of riders about corruption and so on. But largely, it's external investment that Africa desperately needs, so I wouldn't reject it. But I do think that you need to be very careful once you start dealing with China on a policy level, and you start working under China's control, under the control of the Chinese government. Because that's where you start seeing, I think maybe what happened is, and Nicholas Babaya could probably enlighten us a lot more. He knows far more about China than I do. That all this opening up markets and basically harnessing the free markets in order to get rich quickly and in order to alleviate poverty in China, I think that's posing a threat now to the control of the Communist Party. I think a lot of Chinese people are starting to see, look, we can do all this stuff by ourselves. You know, all of this works very well. This capitalism business, this free market business. Why would we need the Communist Party and Communist control? And I think that might be what Xi Jinping is reacting to. You know, he's looking at that as a threat to his power and his authority.
And this was always the hope, I think, in the West that China opening up its economy to foreign investment would force it to become more liberal and democratic. And up till now, that really, I mean, if anything, we've seen the opposite. We've seen China being able to influence free societies around the world. But some of these moves, these sort of paranoid moves to retain power, Sara, do you think that this could be the, the long prophesized freedom creeping in through the market happening in China?
You know, the thing about the Chinese that I think one has to bear in mind is, and I think it's a mistake that the West makes in regard to a whole number of regions, the paradigm under which the Chinese operate is different. And I think relatively few people understand that. Its history is different. It comes from a very, very different place. And it's patient. And so I don't think anything will likely happen sort of at the speed they often happen in democratic societies, because being an authoritarian society, it can keep a lid on opposition for much longer and much more brutally and get away with it. But I think what it will do is, for a number of people who may have thought of going into China, they might be a bit more circumspect, and in that respect will slow things down. But what do you do? The guys that invented COVID are the only people who have growth of any magnitude. That can't be ignored.
And of course, Sara is speaking there about the lab leak hypothesis, which is an interesting debate and one that I think is quite
hypothesis.
Credible, I don't know if it's settled yet, but I tend to buy it at least. I don't know if Ivo has a different view actually on that one.
Right from the start, I suspected that a lab accident it seemed to me the most likely explanation for the whole thing. You know, that it just spontaneously emerged in a wet market just seemed to me a bit odd. But I must say, I have still not seen any firm evidence to that effect. So it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's still an open question.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our final topic for today. Now, anyone who's on Twitter a lot will probably remember a character called Tracy Ziller, who popped up for a short amount of time and made a little bit of a buzz. His Twitter account got something like 30,000 likes, or follows, rather. And this Twitter account purported to be a sort of middle-aged white woman with a surname, you know, similar to Helen Ziller, with the same as Helen Ziller. And she would give, quote-unquote, advice to other races. So I will just read a sample of the advice, in quotation marks, she would give. Quote, funny how blacks complain about how banks give them loans for cars, but don't want to give them businesses and house loans. Listen here, they are not your banks. Build your own bank and stop complaining. You are the only race in the world without a major bank. So obviously racist and, you know, fairly sort of insulting and demeaning. But it caused quite a stir on social media and got quite a lot of followers. And there was a lot of debate as to, you know, what this was about, who this person was. Someone then went in and started doing some research, because I think anyone who read any tweets from this account would very quickly realize this person was very unlikely who they said they were, and found out that it seemed like the evidence pointed to the author of the tweets being a person called Anthony Matumba, who is an EFF counselor from Limpopo in the sort of Louis Trichard area. So what apparently was happening was Anthony Matumba was using this allegedly to basically push sort of EFF narratives and a perception of how the EFF sort of views white people. And then was also monetizing links that he used to the growing clout of this account to enrich himself. He has since been taken before the Equality Court and the South African Human Rights Commission be investigated for these claims against him for making disparaging, racist, and harassing comments towards black women in particular. So, Ivo, let me start with you. What do you make of this?
Look, I'm going to go to bat for Anthony Matumba. You know, the Human Rights Council said he was generating an income from making disparaging and inflammatory comments online. Well, what I thought I saw was satire, in a sense. You know, it was a bit deceptive, but, you know, he was satirizing a white middle-aged woman and how they might speak. You know, is that any different from what Peter Dirk Eisen does? You know, So, you know, he gave patronizing advice to black people. At times he was quite funny, I think. And then he stands accused of posting links to drive traffic to his website. So the humanity, what sort of human rights violation is that? Yeah, I think we should grow a thicker skin collectively. For Matumba, I think the mere exposure that, you know, he was doing this with a party political agenda should be enough embarrassment, you know, to make it clear to everyone that this was not real and that this is, you know, this was just someone trying to stoke a political fire. And it should be very embarrassing for the EFF and for Matumba himself. But really, you know, what some anonymous idiot on Twitter says about us or our race or our culture or religion or gender or whatever else we hold dear should not matter one jot. You know, there's millions of racists and bigots out there. None of them matter. You know, I can't believe that we as a country, with all the very real crises going on around us, are giving bandwidth to two-bit estate agents and backwater councillors mouthing off on social media. I mean, who the hell cares?
Yeah, I agree that the dominance of Twitter over the media is a personal bugbear of mine. And I agree very much, who the hell cares. Sarah, your thoughts. Let it never be said the Daily Friend is not willing to occasionally defend the EFF, sort of.
Occasionally, yeah. I agree with Ivor. I think he's a sort of Titania McGrath of the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he was aiming to do. And you didn't even have to get to the surname Zilla. Tracy is a very, if not middle-aged, white, middle-class name. I mean, it's not a name you see often that black women are given. So it's you could tell it was spoofed before you even got to Zilla. And it was, in its own way, it was not very subtle, but it was quite funny, because he on the one hand, he picked up on the sort of sensitivities of young black women, and on the other hand, he picked up the proclivities of probably a number of middle-aged white women. So really, I mean, I think Julius Malema saying nasty things repeatedly in public about Indians is a far more concern than an account like this. And I think to take it to anywhere is ridiculous. But, you know, it's the as you say, it's the moon, it's the publicity, it's the uncovering, the unmasking. That's the real deal. Not the taking it to some sort of self-righteous equality court.
Yeah, and, you know, it's also worth mentioning that the account has since been suspended by Twitter, so it's not even around anymore. So even if it was worthy of being punished in some sort of way, it's the crime is no longer ongoing, so to speak.
What is the government protecting us from here?
Yeah, no, exactly. But, you know, I must say it is unusual to see an EFF person on the side of these institutions, because almost always they seem to be kind of an ideological alignment with the EFF. So it's I think it's interesting that they managed to run afoul of them in this very bizarre case.
Oh, to be fair, that's happened before. I mean, Malema's appeared before the Human Rights Council several times.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fair enough.
You know, so they have tackled, you know, what you might call, crudely call, black on white racism before. You know, about kill the Boer and that sort of thing.
I know that Andile Ntikama of Black First, Land First has actually argued against racism laws and equality courts, because he says that they'll mostly be used to target black people.
Wow.
Certainly black people like him.
I would never have imagined. I would never have imagined agreeing with Andile on anything.
Yes, now, considering he is South Africa's, I think, foremost black racist.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I also think, I think that our hate speech laws and those sort of things, and our Equality Act is ridiculously strict and over the top. As I said, we really ought to grow a thicker skin. You know, we need to learn to roll with the punches, because punches we will get anyway, whether or not we're protected by the state from some of them.
Indeed. All right, and that is all the time we have for today. So thank you very much to Sara and Ivo for appearing on the show today. Always great to have you guys. And of course, thank you to all of our listeners and watchers. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to support the Institute of Race Relations, which of course is what funds and powers the Daily Friend Show, you can SMS your name to 32823, which you can see on the banner behind me if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, and we will sign you up to become a friend of the Institute. Also, check out the dailyfriend.co.za for news and opinion and analysis, where Sara is an editor and an occasional author, and Ivo is an author, I think a twice weekly author, and currently actually is one of his columns is up on the Daily Friend right now. So go check that out. Anyway, thanks everyone, and have a wonderful day.